Alan Gring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Autumn Semester 2016. Lecture 10, delivered on September 22, 2016. The title of this lecture is Annuities and Perpetuities.
Tonight, Annuities and Perpetuities in Application. I'm going to start with something kind of depressing. Sir, I might have already told you this, but I'm going to tell it to you again. You are going to die someday. You really are. It might be tomorrow. You might be walking across the street in a train. Ding, ding, ding. Or it might be in 70, 100 years. But you are going to die. That is different from some things in this world that don't have a theoretical terminus. You, we know you're going to die someday, but that would not be the case, for example, for a corporation. Corporations are, by their design, meant to live forever. They don't, almost never would they, but they don't have to die. You do have to die. And this, of course, this takes us into a realm where we had a Supreme Court decision more than a few years back, Citizens United, where the Supreme Court said that corporations have the rights, the constitutional rights of individuals, which is, of course, ridiculous because fundamentally a corporation is an immortal entity. A human being isn't. But we'll not get into that here. But I want to bring up, remember the annuity is, an annuity is just a fancy term for something that provides a cash flow. Like, for example, once you retire, you'll probably have some kind of an annuity. Certainly, Social Security will be an annuity to you, a certain amount of money every month for the rest of your life. But you'll also probably be part of some kind of a pension plan where you work that will provide an annuity over the course of the rest of your life. Okay, that's an annuity. But there's a special kind of annuity. Well, your payments on a loan are essentially an annuity, a payback of the amount that was originally paid to you. But there's a special kind of annuity that never ends, that is of quite a bit of interest to us. It is an annuity that is forever. We call that a perpetuity. A perpetuity is an annuity that pays forever, pays on a regular basis, let's say, regular basis, forever. Now, it might seem at first blush, well, what kind of thing could do that? Well, there are several that are very important in finance. But I'll give you two, there are two flavors of perpetuity. There is one called the level perpetuity. That is one that pays the same amount every period forever. And then there is another one called the constant growth perpetuity. That is one that it grows at a predictable rate from year to year. 5% more every year, forever and ever and ever. And we have formulas, they're actually very simple formulas, for finding the present value of those perpetual cash flow streams. The level annuity is the first one. This actually has kind of historical interest to it, but it also has some currency as well. A classic example of a level perpetuity Most people, when they think of stock, they think of common stock. That stock that you buy equity position in the corporation and you hope for capital gain, you hope for a dividend, those kinds of things. But there is another kind of equity. It is an old kind that used to be very popular among some investors. It has lost its luster in recent years. Not sure why. As a matter of fact, I'll go into a little more detail on this. I was at a financial institution that designs investment products, and then it has brokers buy them to sell to their clients. Well, they were doing all these backflips to create an investment product that basically was the same thing as this kind of equity. It's called preferred stock. Now, preferred stock is equity. It has a residual claim. It gets a dividend only after debt holders have been paid in a timely manner. You've paid your bills. Okay, but preferred stock looks like this. CNJ, 1.2% preferred, par value, $40 per share. That's what it looks. Oh, let me do something here. I'm going to call this one cumulative preferred. And I'll explain. What this kind of stock does is when you invest in it, it will guarantee forever that you as the owner or whomever you would sell it to will get 1.2% of $40 every year forever and ever and ever. That's how preferred stock works. It is an extraordinarily mild, tame, uninteresting investment. Quite safer than common, and here's why. For one thing, okay, $40 times 1.2, what would that be? That'd be 48 cents per share. Your dividend, you would get a check for 48 cents per share forever, every year, forever. Now, the thing about this is that it has oddly the characteristic of a bond that never matures. Because like a bond, you get a coupon payment every year on the face value. 8% coupon, you get $80 a year on the $1,000 face value. This behaves the same way, except it's an equity security. But of course it never matures, so you never get the face value of it. So it just rides along. Now the deal is this. The preferred dividend must be paid before any common stock dividend would be paid. You cannot pay a common stock dividend unless you have paid the preferred its dividend. And if it's cumulative preferred, as I made this one, you would have to, if you didn't pay a preferred dividend in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, you'd have to catch up all of the back dividends before you could pay any common stock dividend. So it's, do you see how safe? This is actually a good, it used to be considered a great investment vehicle for fixed income portfolios. For older people who wanted just a check every month, they didn't want capital gains, they didn't want the risks like that, but they wanted the equity, the ownership position in a corporation. Well, here you are. Preferred stock is ideal for that kind of thing. But for some reason, it just lost its luster. For one thing, it was awfully simple. And of course, when you're trying to earn brokerage fees and financial planning management fees, you want to make it at least look like you're doing something. I mean, with this, you just buy a pile of preferred stock for your clients, and then you just let them ride it. Say, for example, I won't go into it, but the deal, the point there being that it isn't sexy at all. It's not. It's very calm, tame stuff. Interestingly enough, I do see preferred stock still being used quite a bit as a financing vehicle. When corporations raise money, they usually do it by bonds or by common stock. You do see certain types of corporations that are still very much dedicated to preferred stock. Where I see preferred stock the most these days is in real estate investment trusts. They're sort of like these corporations that all they do is invest in real estate kinds of deals. But that's where you'll find piles of, if you look for preferred stock, you'll get a listing of all of these companies that are trading preferred stock, and you'll see that a lot of them are REITs, or some kind of real estate related corporations. They like this kind of stock. A nasty little trick that I have just noticed it. I mean, I try to stay abreast of everything, but this one just kind of caught me by surprise because I had no idea it was coming out there. There's a breed of preferred stock out there that has that some corporations have issued in recently that has a zinger in it. It is callable by the corporation. The corporation can turn it into common stock. So in other words, if a corporation was getting into the rabbit warren, not paying its preferred dividends, accumulating them, what it could do if it has this callable preferred, it could get out of the rabbit warren by simply turning it all that preferred stock into common stock, and then all the accumulation of dividends went away. I can't imagine any investor stupid enough to buy that at a very high price. I might buy it, but boy, I'd want that kind of stock cheap as hell because, I mean, the company could pull the rug on me and turn it into common stock at any time when I was counting on my preferred stock dividend forever. Anyway, let me take you on the journey. Preferred. The present value of a level annuity is simply the level cash flow per year divided by the discount rate on that that you put on the cash flow. That's all it is. That's all this is. It's that simple. So in the case of preferred stock, the C would be a dividend. How much is the dividend? So in this case, let me show you two different examples. Suppose that the market says this stock's risk, this CNJ preferred, is commensurate with a risk level of 1%. This is very low risk stock. Remember, preferred stock is very unrisky. So what we would do in this case is we would have that the present value of the CNJ preferred would be the 48 cent per share dividend divided by 0.01. That equals, if you work it out, $48 per share. In other words, this stock, because it pays a dividend that is a little sweeter, 1.2%, than the market says it really should, this stock will sell, this preferred will sell at a little bit of a premium to its par of 40. See, this stock is paying 1.2%. The market says, oh, this isn't that risky. It's about 1% risk on this stock. So, in other words, this would be attractive. Investors would move toward this stock and elevate its price a little above preferred. On the other hand, suppose the market said, this stock's risk level is about 1.4%. In a case like that, and I can't do that one in my head quite as easily, so I'll have to pull it here. Present value of this time of the CNJ would be 48 cents per share over 0.014, which would be about 34.39. Let me see if I can get that on my calculator. 29, yeah. So in this case, the market is saying this is commensurate with a level of risk of about 1.4%, but it pays only 1.2%, so we're going to kind of shy off this, back off it, which will suppress the price down. This preferred will now sell at a slight discount to par. Slight discount to par. But that's a classic example of it. Classic example of it. You see this some other places, too. Another term for this discount rate that you use in a level annuity, and I've heard this one for years in various respects. A lot of times in real estate, you'll hear this, they'll use this formula for certain kinds of the cash flow from certain types of properties, but they'll call this, instead of the discount rate, they'll call it the cap rate for the capitalization rate. I heard it in another respect a few years back. We were talking about trying to get the money together to start a financial analysis institute in the Department of Finance, and I how did it go? Oh, I said, well, okay, how much money is this thing, this institute, going to need every year to run itself? And the number was thrown out to me of $125,000 a year. I said, $125,000. They said, yeah, that'd be about $90,000 for a director and a couple of part-timers, maybe a grad student and some supplies. And I said, okay. And then, before I could say anything else, the guy who was talking to me said, I'd put a cap rate of 5% on that. And at first, I thought, cap rate? He's using a real estate term. Okay, I understand what he wants. He's saying, all right, this would be a level annuity, so the how much they were going to try to raise would be the present value of $125,000 a year forever, discounted at 5%. That cash flow stream forever, telescoped back to the present, would then be 20 times that, which would be that would be what they would need to run it. Okay, you follow? This will take me to the next one, constant growth. The present value, now this one doesn't apply to preferred stock, but it applies to a lot of things. It applies to a lot of things. One of them that it applies to, the constant growth perpetuity. Would be the present value, would be the cash flow at period one, watch out for that, divided by the discount rate minus the growth rate. Now the C1 would be the current payment grown one period. G is the growth rate of the cash flow. There are a couple of very practical applications of this animal. A couple of very, very practical applications of it. I told you that you're not going to live forever, but a corporation will. That means that if a corporation pays a dividend, that dividend would go on forever. Most corporations try to have a constant growth dividend policy. A constant growth dividend policy. Normally, I tell you not to leave, but I know you're going to the econs thing downstairs. I'm going to let the students out a little early. There's an economics organizational meeting, economics club organizational meeting. You'll hear me speak at that here. But I'm going to end this a little early tonight, but I am going to scare the hell out of you with the last thing I'm going to tell you tonight. It's really depressing. But that's okay. You're young. You'll get over it. Okay. But the corporations... Okay, I think I've said this before, and I'll emphasize it now. Dividend policy is a nightmare for a company. If you don't pay a dividend, you're going to get your shareholders bitching at you. But once you start paying a dividend, you are in the program. First of all, if you start paying a dividend and you stop paying a dividend, oh, that's a paddling. The market is going to really whack you for that. Also, even worse, is that the market is going to expect that dividend to grow. And it's going to expect it to grow at a predictable pace. So in other words, once you start paying a dividend, you'd better be ready to keep paying that dividend ever after that. And you'd better be ready to make a little bit of a nudge upward in that dividend year over year over year. So once you decide to start paying that dividend, you're stuck with it. In other words, what I'm telling you is that if I can, as an investor, if I want to look at a stock, assuming that it is reliable, I am going to be able to price it as if it is nothing but a perpetuity of its dividends growing at a constant rate. You'll see what I mean in a minute. And I just run these by chance. You're going to see me try to find the price of a share of a certain stock, assuming that that stock is nothing but a perpetuity, a constant growth perpetuity of its dividends. Now you might say, well, I'm not going to hold the stock forever. I'm going to sell it and realize capital gain. Doesn't matter. You could hold it forever and have it be nothing but a perpetuity of its dividends. So in order to do this, I'm going to pull one out of the hat. Well, one that I know its dividend growth rate out of the hat. And boy, I hope I do this. There have been a couple of times when I really shot the dog trying to do this, but let's try it. Finance.yahoo.com. Now, I'm going to try Discover, mainly because I know that they do have a dividend, and I do know the growth rate of the dividend. Okay, now, the dividend right now is $1.20 a year. By the way, most companies pay the dividend on a quarterly basis, so you'd be getting 30 cents every quarter per share. But so if you owned 100 shares, a round lot of Discover, every year you get a check for $120 off this stock. Now what I've done is I'm taking it out. I didn't look at the price right away. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, all right. Now Discover had a very aggressive growth rate of its dividend. It was surprisingly strong. I mean, a few years back, you had a growth rate of the dividend that was like 27% per year. That is just unsustainable. They have brought it down year over year, and it looks like they're going to level it off with a dividend policy that has a growth rate of 7% per year, okay, on the dividends. Now, the dividend right now, as you can see, is $1.20. So I need the dividend one period out, which would be $1.20 times 1 plus 0.07, okay? Now, the next thing that I'm going to need is what the discount rate is the market is applying to Discover right now. Now, I did a back-of-the-envelope calculation before class, and it looks like, and you'll learn how to do this. It looks like I'm pulling this out of my butt right now. I'm not. You'll learn. It's called the capital asset pricing model. I am thinking that the growth of that the discount rate, what the market assesses the interest rate risk level at, is about 9.2% on Discover. It's a strongly growing company. It's expanding. It's a successful company. They're also a great employer. They've done a lot for us here with hiring guys, you guys. So I'm going to see what the price value. Treating Discover stock as a constantly growing perpetuity, it would be $1.20 per share, growing at 1.07, so the D1. This would be the dividend one. One period out. It has to be one period out. Don't let it bluff you if they give you the dividend now. Divided by 0.092 minus 0.07. That would be K minus G. And remember, you have to use a real, this is math formula, so you have to use the real numbers. Now I'm going to find out what this formula says the price right now should be. And I would encourage you to try to do this with me. I'm going to do 1.2 times 1.07 divided by open parenthesis 0.092 minus 0.07, close the parentheses. $58. This says $58.37 a share. And I'm going to go back up and see what the price coming in is. Well, spank me Buddha. Look at that. That's not bad just for pulling it out of the back of an envelope. Market price right now is $57.80. What I did was I worked out $58.37. What that probably means is the market is probably a little bit higher on the CAPM rate, that 0.092. Maybe about 0.093, 0.0925. What you're seeing is that when the market assesses interest rates that are going up, what that will do is that will cause the denominator to get bigger, all other things being constant, which will suppress stock prices. So in a rising interest rate environment, stock prices will slip downwards somewhat. And that's what we're probably seeing. It's going to be a subtle effect. Yeah, go ahead. Well, that's because I suck as a financial analyst. It's just because I didn't call the 0.092 right. It was just the back of the envelope. Kyle, if I were doing this for my money, I would be a lot better. But the expectation, it's the expectation that they will. The Fed will make its move, but that doesn't mean that the market is not going to start to make its move. Let me ask you this. Do you hear that sound that's coming out of those? They're actually, in about 10 minutes, that's going to turn into poison gas because they want to get rid of us. Okay, now are you going to wait 10 minutes to leave? Or are you going to say FTS and leave now? You're going to leave now, right? Yeah. So if I know that the market interest rates are going to start going up, I don't wait for it to happen. I start moving out of the way as soon as I have the feeling. And what's happening right now in the market is putting in that edge on the interest rates right now, just to give it just to be able to run when it comes time.
I feel like the market does that every time Janet Yellen makes a dunk.
Well, of course it does. But at the same time, sooner or later, she's no longer, when she goes to the toilet to take a dump, it's not going to be gas. It's going to be the real deal. Real finance for real people. Let me show you another example, and then I'm going to get you around to something really odd. Here, we quite honestly, we were behind here in at Illinois State. We were behind for quite a few years in fundraising from alumni and from corporations. We were behind the curve, quite honestly. You know, you have some of these funds like Harvard, what, $2 billion endowment. But we've gotten in some real hot shots. The head guy who's doing fundraising for us, a guy named Norris, he's a force to be reckoned with. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to get people to give us money so that we can do good things for you and not jack up your tuition clear through the sky, which we have to anyway. The reality of it is that in about 1980, maybe 85% of our funding came from the state of Illinois. We'll be lucky over the next couple of years if we can keep that funding above 10 to 12%. In other words, we're no longer a state-sponsored, state-supported university. As our provost said, we are now a state-located university. So in order to keep us from just beating the hell out of you on tuition, we have to find generous donors. We'll find you. We'll hit you up for $25 a year. But what we're also going to do is go to very rich people and wealthy, well-heeled corporations and say, endow something. Endow a room, endow a floor, endow a building, endow a chair so that we can attract the best and brightest minds here so we get more funding from corporations that like to have us have those very bright researchers on our faculty. So here's what we're looking at. Suppose that we are looking, and this would be something that our fundraisers would be doing, we are looking to endow a chair here, okay? We're going to have to pay the chair, whoever holds the chair, $220,000. And that's actually a modest amount for a heavy, for a real heavy name in the business, in academia, okay? Plus, we're going to have other people. We're going to have to fund a couple of grad students, a secretary, maybe modestly another $80,000. So all told, annually, we're going to need $300,000 to pay for the expenses and the personnel. But we're also going to have to recognize that we're going to have to grow that amount probably no less than 5% per year. Just to keep up with inflation and to give merit pay increases. And once we have established a chair has to be permanent. A perpetuity, and in this case, a constant growth perpetuity. So what we need to do is, first of all, we need to say, all right, how much do we need to get someone to donate? You, very rich old woman now, and we are going to schmooze you to get you to endow a chair. We know you got a lot of money. We know you aren't going to live much longer. So we need to talk, okay? And we need to tell you that we are going to name the chair after you and have the brightest mind we can find as the holder of the chair from tenure time to tenure time. Okay. So then we have to think about, all right, we got to put this in the bank. So what rate of interest is this going to earn? What cap rate are we going to have for it? It has to be more than 5%. The formula doesn't work if it's less than 5%. So we're going to have to sit down with a banker. Now, when you, sir, go to the bank to open a checking account, I'm Mr. Banker. You come in and I say, well, how much would you like to make your initial deposit in your checking account for? And you say, well, I got $12. And I'm going to make deposits. I'm working at a job. At the Jiffy Lube, I'm the assistant manager. I'll be depositing $120 every week in this checking account. Well, I'm going to be nice to you. Well, yeah, that's great. Listen, we got some free pens that we're going to give you. But when you, the negotiator for the deposits for an endowment, come to me, first thing I'll do is I'll ask you to take off your shoes so I can kiss your feet. And then it'll get better from there, okay? Because I... Oh, that I shouldn't have eaten before I said that. Okay. Okay, so we'll have a better rate. At best, in this low interest rate environment, it's going to be kind of bad, okay? Let's say that my best cap rate that I can offer is 5.25%. Because as the banker, I have to be absolutely sure that this money is invested safely by the bank. Seriously, I really do. Because I can't afford to have that, whatever money is put in by the university, go tap city. Okay. The amount of the endowment would then be $300,000 would be the initial cash flow. Now, I don't grow this one because this is going to happen next year as it is. So I don't have to grow it one period. We're not doing it right now. The chair will happen in 1 year. So I already have that built in D1 or C1. So I don't have to do that here. Watch out for that in some of those problems they have in the homework. Sometimes you don't have to grow it. They're telling you what it is 1 year from now. And then the K is going to be the cap rate, 0.0525, minus the growth rate, 0.05. And now I'm going to figure out what I need you to commit for the endowment, for the chair. Claire, what do I got? 300,000 divided by 0.0025. Whoa! How do you do? Huh? And get your checkbook out and write this place, this check, okay? Yes, we do keep a straight face when we ask for this kind of money. We have to. And because essentially it's not even a matter of choice. We have got a fund. And it's not just chairs. We could ask for an endowment for a room. We could ask for an endowment for a building. This is the State Farm Hall of Business. We might even want to ask, see if we can get someone to endow the College of Business. Not the building. That's State Farm. But if we sought the College of Business, we might go to, for example, Taco Bell. Okay, not Taco Bell. You're right, Chipotle. Olive Garden, Olive Garden, that would work. And if we were to do that, you're talking about an endowment that would be in the billions for that. And this is where public universities are going. The best will survive, and they won't beat up their students for insane tuition increases. Those who aren't good at fundraising are going to have to make up the breach either through increasing student tuitions or through collapse of the institution. But the reality is that it boils down in a lot of cases, we're just looking at constant growth perpetuities. If the institution is assumed to survive for a whole, forever, which we want it to, at least in theory, we have to look at what we need now as the present value of a perpetuity of a constant growth nature. That's just how it is. And now, ladies and gentlemen, for the last part of this lecture, it sort of blends an almost perpetuity concept with some other with our annuity thoughts. If you were here on the first day of lecture, I mentioned a dollar number, and now you're going to see about where that dollar number comes from. But in order to do this, I have to tell you some good news before I share with you some bad news. And this is just an exercise showing you how we use timelines and all that kind of stuff to calculate values. The bad news is you are going to die someday, and I'll miss you. But the good news is you're going to live a very long time. Compared to people even a century ago, compared to me, I'll be dead within a few years. Thank God I'm getting tired. But you, sir, may be 105 years old. You, 110, 120, the women live longer than the men. There's a lesson to be learned there. Hence why we have Caitlyn Jenner. He's trying to cheat. But the thing is that you guys are going to live quite probably past 100 years old, unless you're stupid and you do some and you want to try a Jackass movie or something. But past 100, okay, now, you won't work that long. I mean, you're going to have to work longer than people a generation ago did. A generation ago, people probably could retire at 62 to 65. You will be expected to be productive into your 70s. Now, in your case, you're going to make enough money and you're going to have a high enough social status that you can probably end your working life around 70 years old. Unless you do something incredible and then you can retire early. But what that means is if you end your productive career at the age of 70, and you live to an expected age of 105, which is very realistic for your generation. I mean, you'll be mostly plastic tubes and all of that, but, you know, whatever. Let's say that you wanted to live in reasonable comfort. Now, the number I'm going to throw out there is actually not reasonable comfort. You will eat something slightly better than cat food on this salary. It would be about $80,000 a year. And we won't even make it grow. We'll just have you live on this, recognizing that this will be eroded by inflation, the cost of living, but at least you'll have $80,000 every year to live on. And again, that will be just slightly better than cat food in the back years of the 21st century, okay, and into the 22nd century, which is where we're talking in this. It's kind of scary that we can actually talk realistically about the 22nd century here. Okay, so the first thing that we would want to do is to find the present value at 70 years old. How much money would you have in an account, in a bank account, in order to be able to pull out $80,000 a year for 35 years? How much money would you have in the account? Well, that one's easy to do. That one is actually easy. Bear with me a minute. I'm going to pull up the financial calculator, and I'm doing this so you can see me do one of these, do these on the financial calculator again. I kind of was hoping I would have been smart enough to do that. My finance lab. Yep. Okay. Sign in. No, quit that. Idiots. Sign in. And we're going to look at the financial calculator. Pulling it up. Now, turning this back on here. Seriously? It's warming up. Okay. Now, the first thing to ask yourself, this is clearly a present value of a level annuity. Now, the next thing is this an annuity, an ordinary annuity, or is this an annuity due? Which is it? Is this ordinary or annuity due? Remember that an ordinary annuity, each cash flow component occurs at the end of the period. Annuity due, each cash flow component occurs at the beginning of the period. So is this going to be a due or an ordinary? If I want to find it at 70 years, it would be an ordinary annuity because the cash flows would occur at the end of each year. But if I want to find the present value at 71 years, then it would be an annuity due. You can do it either way, but you have to recognize very carefully what's about to happen with this. What I'll do is I'm going to treat this as an ordinary annuity, where at 70 years old, your first payment occurs at the end of the 70th year. Now, I understand why you would call it an annuity due, and you can do it that way. But notice that the timeline actually helps me. Is there some reason the projector sucks? There it is. Okay. So what I'll do is I'm going to key this in. And again, what I'm doing is I'm doing this for the purpose of you seeing the whole thing in action. Okay, so now we'll have an $80,000 a year payment in this. And we're going to do this for 35 years. Did I put in 80,000? Now. Oh, did I? It looks like it got took 30. I want 35. N. There, that's it. Now, I'm going to need an interest rate. Realistically, 7%? It's going to long term. In my earlier life, we said 7% would be an average. This is all based on an equilibrium model that actually comes from physics. This isn't just speculation. This is actual Newtonian physics. But there is a parameter in that called Tobin's Q. It's like a constant of nature, like the speed of light, like pi, like E. But strangely, it was speculated at the end of the 1990s, and now we've got confirmation that Tobin's Q, a constant of nature, has slipped. The fact that it slipped means that for you guys, 7% is no longer going to be the long-term average growth. It's going to be closer to 5%. Why that happened, there's some nasty theoretical implications behind it. I'm going to put a 5% on as a discount rate. So, putting in a 5% I over Y, I can now compute the present value. Compute the present value. $1.3 million. But realistically, 5% is going to be a very speculative thing for you. About $1,310,000. That's how much I would have to have in the bank account right here in order to finance $80,000 a year for 35 years. And if you were unfortunate enough to still be healthy at 105, you would have to kill yourself because you ain't got nothing after that. Okay? So there's the $1.3 million you have to have free and clear after taxes in order to live another 35 years living modestly. No health problems, nothing like that, just housing and food and other things you might want. Okay, now the question is, what would I have to put in the bank every year from the age of, let's say, clear back here? I want a future value right here. At the age up to 70, I want to be putting money in. Starting when I am 22 years old, how much do I have to put in so that I can put in one last payment on my 70th birthday and then start collecting on my 71st? So in other words, what I want to do here is, if I am looking right now when I'm 21, I would have an annuity, as most of you are, I'm assuming. I would have 22, 23, up through 70, bring it back to here. That would be a present value of an ordinary annuity of, what, 48 years? How much would I have to put in the bank every year in order to do this, in order to pull off what I want to do, what I am trying to accomplish? So in other words, in this case, I would have a 46-year annuity. It would be a 46-year annuity, ordinary, deposited at, realistically, we'll give it 5%, reset for a future value, reset. What I want to do is I want to accomplish $1,300,000 as the future value of an annuity, which is actually an ordinary annuity because the payments are at the end of each period. I'm playing a little fast and loose there. 5% enter for 46 years is your N. And so I would have to compute now the payments. You're going to have to put $7,700 into the bank every year. Disciplined. No mistakes. No, well, I'll pull it out and have some fun with it, or something really important came up. Nothing can touch this. And you have to do this every year for 46 long years in order for you to have enough in the bank at your 70th birthday that you can quit, and on your 71st, you can start pulling $80,000 a year payments. Now, what does that mean, however, $80,000 is worth right now? What's your equivalent income? If we assume an inflation rate of 2%, a modest 2%, what we would want to do is take $80,000 and let's pull that back at 1 plus 0.02% for 46 years, so the negative 46th power. Let's see what $80,000 a year is actually worth in today's dollars. What you're talking about for your income, living on $80,000 a year when you're at the age of 71, what is it that equivalent now worth? Whoops, I didn't mean to do that. Clear. Okay, reset. Times 1.02 backed off. I didn't want that. Reset. 80,000. Well, I can't do it that way. I'm going to have to do it another way. This is a financial calculator. 1.02 to the 46th power. Try that again. 1.02 to the negative 46th power equals No, I that didn't. 1.02 to the negative 46th power. Okay. Now, we want to take the reciprocal of that times $80,000. This calculator is being misbehaving on me. That $80,000 that I'm projecting that you'll live on at the end of the 21st century, actually, that's the equivalent of about an annual income of about that right now. So all the projections that I just did for you, putting away $7,000, $7,700 a year for the next 46 years, every year with discipline, interest rates staying in the 5% range on a safe investment, you are going to live on the equivalent in the late 21st century, you will be living on the equivalent of $32,000 a year until you die at the age of 105. And don't get sick, because that will blow it all and we'll just have to kill you right on the spot. I'm sorry about that. That's all I have for you. Go on.